Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Actually, I think I should title it Woman Power, because what we are going to be discussing today is the healing power of the sacred woman, health, creativity, and fertility for the woman's soul. When I got Christine Page's book, I was really, really unaware of what was going to be in the book. And when I finished reading it, and those of you that are regular listeners know that I always read the material before I book a guest, I was so impressed that a physician, a woman physician, chose to travel a path that in her writing enables her to have not just an insight, an awareness that she herself gained from her journey of exploration into the sacred woman, the understanding of same, but she is able, as a physician, to be able to bring this forward to other women through this book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman. It's much more than what you would possibly imagine, and I want to welcome to the show Christine Page. Christine, it's a delight to have you with us today.
Oh, Donna, thank you so much, and your words have already touched me. Thank you so much for what you're saying about my baby, my new book.
A book is a baby, isn't it?
It is.
So it's a part of one's soul, one's spirit, because whoever writes, I don't care if it's a children's book or it's a how-to book, there is that's a part of you that is put into that written form, which is a legacy, which I think in this book is just very, very profound for women. And I want my audience to know that you got her medical degree from the University in London, and you have been called a mystical physician, which after going through your book, I understand. And you've spoken at seminars and have done all kinds of interaction with people. But I always feel that it is so important to be able to come to the core essence of why you as a physician decided, number one, to embark on your own personal journey, and number two, what you found were the levels of self that you had to become aware of. And I know that's a huge question, but would you answer that for my audience, please?
I will indeed. That is a very big question. I think I have to start off at the beginning, which is very much where I would say I was, when I was born, I never lost my connection to the spirit world. I always knew I had guidance. I was always very intuitive. And when you ask the question, why did I look within myself, it's like, well, doesn't everybody? Mm-hmm. There was never another choice for me. This was always going to be my journey was about self-reflection, excuse me, and self-knowing. And I have never been able to talk about something or write about something that didn't come from within me. I had to walk my talk. And so my journey as a physician, also because I was brought up with spiritual matters and healing and healers and complementary medicine, I've always looked at the broader picture of what is healing rather than just saying it's because of those medicines. Healing to me has always been the journey of the soul, the journey of finding wholeness for me and for my patients. Mm-hmm. And therefore, this journey of writing this book was a culmination of saying, what is it for me to be a woman? Do I understand my body? Do I love my body? Do I appreciate what it does for me? As well as I think I'm in a position as a physician to speak about subjects that maybe others couldn't speak about, mm-hmm. and to put it in a language that hopefully was informative and maybe a bit playful at the same time. And my journey was made even more powerful when I had finished the book, October 9, 2011, and I sent the book in, and 2 weeks later, I developed a breast lump. And what was ironic, or retrospect, mm-hmm. or the universe had a good sense of humor, was that the why I decided to write with the book was because I was fed up of hearing women are being described with breast cancer as, oh, they're such a nice person, fancy them getting cancer. And I wanted to scream and say, but that's why they have cancer, they're far too nice. And when I developed breast cancer, I had to face my own niceness, my own being mm-hmm. a pleaser, wanting everybody to like me, and recognizing how easy it was for me to subjugate my own needs for the needs of other people.
Wow, that is a huge, huge statement. Subjugating my needs for the needs of other people. That is so powerful. I can relate to that. I think so many women, even men, can relate to that. I mean, it's amazing. So excuse me for interrupting you, but I just had to comment on that.
Oh, I thank you, because it really was the most powerful part, and I really just wanted to finish to say that while I had surgery, I had radiotherapy, and while I was having the radiotherapy, I had to rewrite the book, because now here was a depth of knowledge about especially breast cancer, but also illness, that I knew was essential to be put into the book. It felt as if the breast lump was writing the book for me. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the breast cancer gave me so many opportunities, so many wonderful healings took place because I had the cancer. And I want that message to get across. At no point did I ever think that something was being done to me, that my body was being attacked, I was struggling or suffering from. I knew that this had happened because my soul was taking me to a deeper level that brought me towards true healing. And I never had any doubt that this was coming from love.
You know, this statement, when you make it, really makes someone pause, because there is this component of attitude and thought that when something occurs, it has to be a death knell, number one,
right.
Or there's all of these other variables. And I'd like to share a personal story, because for those that are listening, I so related to your book. Many years ago, I was in a marriage that was a very, very bad marriage. It was a total lie. And your book goes into these emotional stories of women, and I feel like it's important for me to be honest with my audience and to have them understand why I feel your publication is so important. I ended up getting a very, very bad internal condition that I wasn't even aware of. All I knew is that there was something wrong. And I can remember going into the doctor, and it was in the vaginal area. And the doctor looked at me, and I'd walked 3 miles to get to the doctor. I didn't have a car. I was in my early 20s. I had no transportation. It was up to me. Nobody was taking me. I just knew I needed some medical help. When he examined me, he looked at me. He said, I want to know why you are not in pain, because you have XYZ condition. It's very serious. And I don't understand how you even walked these many miles to get to the doctor's office. I don't get it. Anybody else would have been in extreme pain. But this was, I realized in my early 20s, a reflection of pain and suffering and the lie I had been telling myself about the relationship, about the marriage. I was running from the truth. And I ended up going through a horrific treatment, which was excruciatingly painful. It was actually barbaric, to be perfectly frank, knowing what I know now. And it was within a few months later that I ended up getting the divorce from this person in my life. But a physical manifestation in my female organs had occurred. I did not have a reoccurrence of it later on. And I, like you said, we sacrifice ourselves for other people's needs. And in my early 20s, this was such a powerful lesson for me because I was swallowing everything, emotionally, mentally, physically, until my body just exploded and said, wake up. And it was so powerful for me. And I have observed this with myself through the years. So your book goes into this, and I so respect and appreciate your positioning that you looked at this as a gift. Now, some people listening to this might say, oh, you're out of your minds. You two women are nuts. But the reality is when you can look at whatever is going on and have integrity with yourself, and that is first and foremost, and you bring this out in the book because this is what you had to walk through. Man, oh, man, it is empowering, but it also can be very, very frightening to someone that is just getting into this phase of understanding because you don't blame, there's no guilt, there's no punishment here. It's just awareness that the body is reflecting something. And that's what I cherished about your book. I feel that it's so valuable.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for sharing your own story. It's I just think that every time we tell these stories that maybe our listeners will actually hear their own story in it. It's the sharing from women like ourselves who have come through this, maybe in our 20s, 30s, 40s. You know, we are still right here, and we're empowered by these stories, not held back by them. And I appreciate that how, you know, I'm now 35 years of being a doctor, and I use always this idea that there's not a disconnect between what's going on in your life and what's going on in your body. And mm-hmm. So that first question I always ask is, what's going on in your life when you got sick? And over 30 years, I've had people, mainly with cancer, because many of those will come to me, will say, I know why I have cancer. And I think, if you know, why are we in the medical profession not listening to you, not helping you? So if we'd asked that question of you, why, what's going on in your life, that might have been the turning point, as it was, obviously, for your body saying, I am your greatest friend. The body is the friend, not the enemy. Mm-hmm. And I am crying out for you to hear me, because that's where we need to make a change in our life.
I think that is so significant. And in today's world, for all of the information that we have available to us, it is so seldom that you will hear another woman say to a woman, I want you to empower yourself. I want you to know that you're a gift in this experience of life. And not only are you a gift, and this goes for men too, but you are also someone that is the nurturer of life, but you must nurture yourself first. And I want to quote from your book. You made a statement in here. For the past three millennia, patriarchy has dominated and polarized the world. Men have believed it is the right to tell women how to look, act, speak, and behave, and women, for the most part, have simply gone along with the deception. And when I read those words, there were so many things that flashed through my mind because I have had integration with people of different cultural backgrounds around the world. I thought how simple it is. And we have a war, we have wars about this all the time. In most places in the world, including the United States, the woman was really demeaned. And young women today don't realize that it was just recently, less than 100 years ago, that women started gaining in the United States the positioning of what you would describe as knowing they could be self-sufficient, even though there were all of these paradigms of no, you don't do this, no, you don't do that. The 60s came around, there was an explosion, and gee whiz, I'm going to take over. But what happened is there's still this, and you use the words ancestral, I heard the words yesterday from someone I was having a conversation, familial, genetic, cellular memories that are passed along. And until someone comes along and knocks on our mental door saying, hello, would you open your door of thinking enough to realize that you're not your mother, you're not your grandmother, you're your own person, you can change the patterns? That's hard to do because
it
we
is.
Have all of this stuff that's been
it
going
is.
On for millennia.
It is, and you know, becoming that empowered woman, unfortunately so many of our young women, and I think this was what happened from our trying to empower ourselves, unfortunately we masculinized ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so the desire to be a woman now is to be a powerful male, a mini man, as I call them. And that is not the direction that we're going to find our empowerment.
Right.
It's going to be by, as I say, honoring the fact that as a woman we have tremendous powers that we don't even know exist within us. And if we want to do the healing, we do need to go back to our ancestors. And one of the workshops I run, we actually get the participants to imagine meeting at least three generations back. And what they meet is women who say, you know, I tried it this way, or I tried it this way, but I never really honored myself as a woman. So part of the healing we're doing is also not necessarily to be like our ancestors, but to understand the wound that they carried, which is 3,500 years old. So you're never going to get back there. This is very ancient, but it is. We need to understand that the wounding of our mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, at least three generations, is impacting our daily life. And we may
Fair
say,
enough.
But I'm doing things very differently than my mother. But you may also just be doing it to almost oppose what she did, but you're no more so in your feminine power. You may just be using energies in a different way. So I'm wanting to say it's very important that we do understand that there is wounding in our family, and not to try and just move away from the feminine, because what I meet and hear is, I don't like my mother, or I don't respect women, I respect men. And we now need to move towards the fact that because we don't respect our female ancestors, or maybe our sisters or our friends who are women, we need to say, what is it about women that we've lost? And as you said at the beginning, this is a time for women to come together and share what they think mustn't be shared because it would make them feel lesser. And I've met so many women in my work who come up and say, I've never told another person this, but... And it's something like, oh, I don't think my breasts are pretty enough, or I think that my hair isn't. Women are hiding the feelings that they have of shame about who they are, and that must stop.
One of the points that I want to bring out, which is very, very meaningful to me, because I've had so many clients through the years that have gone through this, and I look at so many expressions in today's world, and sometimes it creates a deep, deep agony inside of me, and that is domestic abuse. I was in a business meeting yesterday with a gentleman who deals with Native Americans, and the level of domestic abuse, violence, both on the part of the female as well as the male, is just phenomenal. It's just absolutely phenomenal. And there was a time in their ancestral history that was not the case. But this has evolved because of a feeling of helplessness. And typically, whenever anybody is doing this to someone else, they are really a bully, in my mind. I don't care if they're male or female. They've become so disempowered that they think this is the only way that they can have dominion in their space. And there's no excuse for it, but it's done. And you give numbers in here that when I read the numbers, I just, it brought tears to my eyes, because I thought, this is something, the only way it can change is with mindfulness on the part of people. And women and children so frequently are the victims because, one, they're much smaller in size, obviously, but two, it has been a cultural positioning that has been reinforced in different places around the world. And fortunately, here in the United States, there's been a change, but in certain environments, there's been none. And so, again, I feel like women need to empower themselves where they need to know that this doesn't have to happen in their space. They don't have to deal with it. And I think of one dear lady that I know that went through 20 years of horrific abuse. Horrific abuse. Sent to the hospital, I don't know how many times. And I ask, why? Self-esteem. That's what it came down to. Somewhere along the line, she bought into it that she wasn't worthy and that this, she deserved this for whatever reason. I talked with a woman a couple of months ago, 36 years of abuse. I listened to this, and I go, your book could go a long way to helping these women become awakened to the reality they can break the record of repetition. They can smash it into smithereens and make a new record, stand on their own two feet, realize they can create their new story, but they must take the initiative. Your information in this book is just extremely powerful.
Well, I thank you all for that, Donna. And as you say, when I was writing about the amount of abuse, whether it's physical, emotional, sexual, I also had to take time out. It was like, oh my God, this is huge. Mm-hmm. And I think in this country, we need to not be complacent that it's happening somewhere else. I think I wrote the figures that every 18 minutes a woman is being beaten. I mean, that shouldn't be happening in our culture. Mm-hmm. We should be recognizing, you know, the 1 in 4 children being abused. It's like, oh my goodness, this shouldn't be happening. There is no reason why a child should be being abused on any level. There's no excuse for it. And I think that when I was, you know, I do working with people, I'd listen to them, maybe they were in their 40s and 50s, and I'd think, good, abuse isn't happening now. And it's like, Christine, you're being so naive. It's happening. Mm-hmm. And abuse can happen on so many different levels. It may be physical, it may be sexual, but even emotional abuse can be just as challenging, as you talk about that lady, as much as that, is mm-hmm. when you constantly hear that you're nothing, you are lower than nothing, that you're doing something wrong. That is so undermining of the power that can almost destroy you as much as anybody laying a finger on you. And that has to change, and I think, I very much hope that through my writing, through my teachings, it's saying, women, it's time now to take back your power, and as you say, it's now your choice. But these things happening to you, you do have some power by saying, I wish to move into my own heart, into my own power now, and that will start to shift the energy. And again, as I say, the more that women can come together to share and not find themselves competing with each other, the better. Because women's power is in community. And women have got separated due to their jobs, due to life. They're not living around their families so much. And that's caused them to feel separate and then feel more ashamed of who they are. So women connecting is so important.
Absolutely. And I think that when people like yourself are able to present that, then that is something that people can, the woman, she's able to develop her own legacy. And everyone benefits around her. Her family will benefit. Even those relatives she can't stand will benefit because she'll be a walking example of the finest and the best. And what I like about what you give in the way of information is this does not create arrogance. It creates what I would describe a calmness, a strength, an assertiveness, where you can quietly walk your own way and lead by example, where other women can look upon you and say, I want to know what it is that allows you to have such clear eyes, that gives you the feeling of standing tall and strong in your own feminine self and harmonizing the masculine side with you. And because we're all masculine and feminine, yes, when those components of the self are in harmony, there's literally nothing we cannot do. And we will find we gain respect from the men whose paths we cross, and we will be honored and respected. And if we're disrespected, we do not need to even tolerate that. That's that person's problem, not our problem.
Exactly.
And we can turn things around. And I was impressed with how you say women who experience interpersonal problems, usually it's because of a lack of trust and evasiveness. And I have seen this so many times. I know I experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
And trust
mm-hmm.
and respect is something that has to be earned. But we have to give it to ourselves first. We have to trust ourselves and respect ourselves first.
We have. And that word respect is very important to me. It's like a basic honoring, a right for every being on this planet, whether it's a plant or an animal. Everything deserves to be respected for its presence here. And so when I speak to women who say, oh, do you think I deserve that respect? I say, well, every animal, every plant deserves that respect. That word is a basic right of every being on the planet. This isn't about a question. And so I say to a woman, do you feel respected by that friend, by that partner? Would you let an animal be treated that way? And that's the basic answer question is, in the presence of this other person, do I feel respected? And that should be the first question, so you can say, I don't feel that you respect who I am. And it doesn't matter if you understand what I'm about, or even if you love me. First of all, just respect me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good point. You make a comment in your book that you can most definitely say that you didn't go to medical school, you went to martyr school, and I just chuckled at that. You said you were trained to be a professional and to be at your best at all times, however tired, sick, or unhappy you were in the moment. My goodness, that has been one of the biggest complaints that has been leveraged against medical education process, the educational process. And I thought, how many people in different profession, different environments, realize that that's what they've been taught, male or female,
mm-hmm.
but especially the woman.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is to be the sacrificial lamb. And in so many religious teachings, and I might raise the hackle with some, but I can remember, I was raised a Catholic, and I can remember it was okay for the woman to be sacrificed. Because for the greater good of the family, that was her obligation. Well, that was a patriarchal positioning.
Right.
And what really caused me to get very upset is when the attitude was always save the child. It's okay for a mother to die. The child is more important. And when I found out about that when I was 19 years old, I was just appalled. I thought, my goodness, the mother is the core. Why in the world would she not have any value? The child without the mother is just going to be abandoned and lost, and who knows how that life will go. And I know there would probably be some commentary to that. But I can remember it caused me to think, and I thought, why? Why is this acceptable? Who is it that says that the woman should accept unpleasant circumstances? Why should she become subservient? Why should she be the slave? Why should she be of this positioning? And it's taken a long time for us to even get to the point we are in this country. But yet you look and you listen at the news, you think of the 14-year-old girl that was horribly, horribly assaulted. She's surviving because she's in England. And yet there are people that say we're going to kill her because she wanted an education. Well, it's happening in all parts of the world. And there's horrible, horrible other things that are being done. And the only way this is going to change is if the women of the culture say enough is enough. And we have to stand true to that. And that's what your book, I think, and even more. Your book has so much in it, Christine. You go into health issues with women. I think this is a book that men should read. Because they need to understand if they have an anger, it's not necessary that women are not a threat to them because so many men feel threatened. But the woman needs to be at peace with who she is as a woman. And I think your book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman, goes a long way towards this. It's a powerhouse of information.
I thank you so much. I have men coming up to me in my workshop saying, thank you for what you're saying. I'm trying to help my wife, my children, my daughters, but they're the ones who don't want to take on some of the things that you're speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to honor the men who really are wanting to walk beside us and to be our partners and to be proud. My husband says there's nothing more beautiful than a woman in her power.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are many men who say, please don't sacrifice yourself. Don't give yourself away. That doesn't make you beautiful. It makes, you know, it disempowers the male at the same time. And we can't change anything when we're being the martyr or the victim. The only changes we can make when we make a choice to say, I choose not to do that anymore. And that has to be encouraged by other women and by our husbands and our partners who say, I hear so many people say, my daughter, my son is saying to me, Mom, come on, leave the marriage. We're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, the young are desperately trying to encourage us. And often I'll say to a mother, the best thing you can do for your daughter is to show example, to lead and show her and for your son. And staying
Absolutely.
In a marriage that's not happy or staying or being small isn't helping either of them.
Absolutely true. Christine Page, this has been a delight. As a physician, I just think that whoever has the chance to cross your path is very fortunate. I think your book, The Healing Power of the Sacred Woman, is, well, again, it would take days to go through all of this. I mean, it's just so loaded with good information. And for those of you listening, go to her website, Christine Page, and that's christinepage.com, and you'll find more wonderful and insightful information. She goes into history, she goes into so many aspects that are archetypal, but more than that, it still has an effect on us. Believe me, it'll touch your heart, your soul, and it will empower you. She's got a wonderful book here. Christine Page, thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you so much, Donna, and for all that you bring to the world. Thank you for the work you're doing.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Check out our website, christinepage.com. We are taking a break. We're going to be back shortly. Don't go away. More good things to come.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to give me a call, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Telephone number 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that would be of interest to you, especially for the new year of 2013. I do want to let those of you in California who are listening know that I am going to be making a trip. I'm going to be both in Santa Barbara as well as the Los Angeles Glendale area. My trip is scheduled for February the 4th. The broadcast will still be going on during that week, but I'll be broadcasting from the Golden State. And more information I will be making available to you. So the trip date will be from the 4th, and I'm not quite sure how long I'm going to be there, probably for about a week. But I did want to start letting you know, so if you wanted to meet with me while I'm there, all you have to do is give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, and we can schedule some time together. And also, I will be putting the updated information on the trip and my timing for same in my newsletter and up on my website in due course. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we are going to have a wonderful guest. It's going to be about dogs. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, I have a big bias because it's going to be about Scotty dogs. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Kathleen Solving, and she's got a wonderful book, a charming book, that is about dogs of war. Now, these are three special dogs that historically have quite a history. A love affair is involved, and so much more. So we're going to find out about them, and to my delight, two of them are Scottish Terriers. So you know that this is going to be mine because we are avid lovers here in the Sebo household of Scottish Terriers, actually terriers of any kind. So I look forward to having you join me. It's going to be a lot of fun, and ooh, you're going to find out some things about historical figures you didn't even know about. That's right. So I hope you will join me. Let's take our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
I'm Karen.
Hi,
I'm calling
Karen.
From Nevada.
In Nevada. What
Hi.
Part of Nevada?
Carson City.
Wow. One day I'm going to make it there. I've never been in Carson City. And I know it's not that far from Las Vegas, but I've never made it down there. You have a city that's got a lot of history there. Fascinating place.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get down to business with you, hon. First thing that I'm looking at, Karen, is you are sort of in a stalemate right now. You're not really moving forward. You're not going backwards. You're just sort of there. You're sort of stuck. However, that's not going to last very long. You are typically a very decisive woman, but I feel that some circumstances and a particular individual have, in your mind, hit you with a whammy stick, and you're going, I've got to deal with this. I've got to recuperate from this. What strategy am I going to engage in? And I really think that this is a very good way to think, but I want, I want you to do something else. I want you to take some time for yourself, and I don't care if it's walking, I don't care what you do, but I want you to be alone because your problem-solving, intuitive rhythm of perspective occurs when you're doing something mindlessly and just walking. You know, your radar is working. I'm not asking you to walk down the middle of the street against traffic, but you are going to be, it's like you're detaching. You're disassociating. You're putting the problem in the front of your mind, the situation that needs to be resolved, and then you're doing something. I had a girlfriend that liked to scrub floors, or you could wash windows, whatever it is. It's not something that's engaging you in a problem-solving activity. So if you do something physically and just allow yourself, your intuitive processes, to pop ideas into your head, you're going to be able to resolve this. And I do think you're going to have to stand up and speak out to an individual who is not going to want you to do that. And you're going to have to use the two-letter word, no. I am not going to do this. I think of a woman, I'll give this as an example, who has become responsible for the financial situation in her family. And what has happened is that the family is going along thinking that they can do whatever they want to do. The husband doesn't have an income. The kids just think, well, I can buy this, I can buy that, I can buy the other. And the woman who has always wanted to be making sure everything was hunky-dory finally had to sit down and say, sorry, we don't have money for this, we don't have money for that, this is our debt, and put the numbers out in front of the individual and say, this is what we're dealing with, and we're not going to be able to do it. So let's come up with something new. Now, I use that example, but this is how you're going to have to approach this individual who seems to think that you don't know what you're doing or you have no concept of reality. And I honestly don't know whether this is a male or a female personage in your life. But you really have to get down to the bare bones and present the numbers, present the facts, and say, this is where we are. This is what we've got. We're not able to go here. We're not able to go there. If this is a working project, maybe you come up with a plan. But I'd say dump all the facts in their lap and then say, I would appreciate any feedback that you have. If you think that there is a better way of doing this, let me know. And don't be in an accusatory tone. Say, you tell me how you think this should be handled. And then leave it alone. Put it in their lap, in their mental lap. Now, it's going to be a tough thing because they're going to become very belligerent. This individual is going to become belligerent with you in that they're going to say, well, this is all your fault. You're going to say, it doesn't make any difference whose fault it is. This is where we are. This is what we have to deal with. So how do you feel that this can be handled? So don't be intimidated and don't be afraid. They're the one that's going to be afraid. So you just need to give them the facts and hold true to using the word no. And what's going to happen, there's going to be a lot of agitation. It's like there's a minor tsunami here emotionally, and you just have to look at it and say, well, that's not me. I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to be concerned. They have to handle the tsunami. And if they're not going to choose to handle the tsunami, if they're not going to choose to, which I think they actually will, but if they're not going to choose to face it, you have to keep it in front of them until they see it. Because it's like I see their head going from left to right. I don't want to look at this. I don't want to see it. You must see it. Because this is something you have to look at. These are the facts. This is what needs to be done. Right here, right now, this is what we're looking at. And so I think you're going to find yourself breaking a shackle of fear of your own because of doing this. You're not going to raise your voice. You're not going to get angry. You're just going to say, these are the facts. This is what I'm dealing with. You make your choices. And it's going to make you aware that your leadership skills are being developed here. You're not trying, you know, you're really honing your leadership skills, and you're honing your communication skills. So look at it sort of like a training boot camp that you're going to be going through for the next few months. And that sounds rather harsh, but it isn't there. It really isn't. You are breaking through your own glass ceiling. That may be the best way for me to describe it. You are breaking through your own glass ceiling. And I want to say, when you do it, you're taking a mallet and you're going kaboom. And you're going to say, this feels good. This feels good. It's taken you about 5 years to get to this point. And I want to compliment you because I think you're doing a very good job. But it's that calmness inside of you and not, you know, not trying to make anything good or bad, just saying, these are the facts. This is what has to be done. What question do you have for me today?
For me for the next year, like you said, I'm moving forward and I'm not going backwards, but just what's going to come?
Well, this is as I said, the first quarter of this year, to me, is like going through boot camp. You're breaking new ground. The second and third quarter is a restructuring of how you see yourself and where you want to go from what you get through in the first quarter. Okay. The last quarter is then initiating the action that's needed. Not that you won't be putting action out in the interim. You will. But there's more of a decisive plan that you're going to come up with, I think, probably before the middle of September.
Okay. Well, that's ways away.
So you're really in an action year, and it's a year of, well, I want to call it an action year and also an aha year, where you're waking up to certain things that you want and certain things you don't want. And it's on all levels.
Yeah.
And this is healthy. This is good. This is not a negative in my mind's view. But it is something you're going to work your way through.
Okay.
And I want to thank you
good.
For your call.
Thank you.
And I'm so delighted that you have been able to be a part of the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a wonderful day now.
You the same. Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break when we come back. The Peking Man, have you ever heard of him? Well, I did, but I became educated about something that belongs to history that completely disappeared. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open. If you wanted to give me a buzz, I'd be delighted to light your life up with a little bit of insight. 888-627-6008. Peking Man. Ever heard of that? Well, I can remember hearing that term off and on through the years, but I really didn't know anything about it. And this occurred in December 1929, 25 miles away from Peking, China. Now, we all know how significant the archaeological sites are in China that are actually being recognized and discovered after thousands and thousands of years. And it's got such a history. China is just a culture that goes back so much further than what we're even aware of. And it's just amazing. Their history is amazing as a country, as a nation. Well, there is an archaeologist, P. Wei Hong, that in 1929 was lowered by rope into a newly excavated chasm. Now, where was this located? It was at a site called Dragon Bone Hill. Now, at the time, he could only use candlelight for illumination. And he found something that was really a big archaeological find. It was a human skull. And it was the first of a collection of 500,000-year-old bones from nearly 40 people, men and women. There were no children, apparently, in this collection. But men and women, 500,000 years old, the bones. Now, this skull was dubbed the Peking Man. And they felt, when they found this, that this was going to provide a missing link in what was known about the evolution of the human species. Now, these fossils that were found, including this skull, were taken to the Peking Union Medical College. They were going to be studied. This was quite significant. Now, during the 1930s, They continued to unearth bones and artifacts, and they were put on exhibit. Well, when the Japanese invaded China during World War II, the Peking Man, the skull, and many of the other bones, was shipped to the United States for safekeeping because the destruction was just horrific. They just wanton destruction of everything. So it was tucked away, and it was put into two custom-built steamer trunks. The bones, the 500,000-year-old bones, were added to the luggage of an American medical officer who was going by train to a port city called Qinwangtao. Now, the bones were offloaded at a small U.S. Marine camp on the outskirts of that city, and then it was transferred to the American steamship of the SS President Harrison. Well, the Japanese invaded the area and intercepted the train, and of course they went through the cargo, and they captured the American Marines. The fossils, they disappeared. They just don't know what happened to them. And there's some people that think that the bones were just thrown out or trampled on, destroyed. And there are others that think it was smuggled somehow out of the country by a U.S. serviceman who knew what was being carried. Well, there was an international businessman at the time. His name was Christopher Janus. The Peking Man became an obsession with him. He offered a reward in the 1930s of $100,000 for any information leading to their recovery. Well, one of the many leads that he received involved a woman that he was never able to identify, who insisted that he meet her at the top of the Empire State Building. When he met this unidentified woman at the top of the Empire State Building, she gave him a picture of the collection and told him she would actually turn over the bones in this collection if he gave her $500,000. Now, the photo ended up being authenticated. This was not a made-up item. However, the woman disappeared before the exchange could be made. So someplace, somewhere, the collection still exists. But who has it? Who knows? Maybe she found another buyer that responded more quickly. You just never know. But that is a mystery of history that even to this day, well, people are still questioning. Donna Sebo here, telephone line 888-627-6008. Money. Wow. There's so many times that we will say to ourselves, oh, if only I had a little bit more. How many times do we actually look at how we can work with what we've got? I was reviewing some material this morning, and one of the items that was stated was a story about a young couple. They had an income of about $45,000, and they had gotten into credit card debt. And the advisor that worked with them said, what you do, you look at your numbers, you look at everything that's in front of you, and then you start saying, how can I whack this debt down? Well, this young couple was able to look at their budgeting and figure out what they could do, how they could take the XYZ dollars they had and would give themselves maybe a deadline of clearing this debt that they had accrued, which wasn't a real big amount, but for them on their income, it's quite a bit. It was like $12,000. And one of the things they decided they were going to do is sell some of the things that they had and just really get down to what you call minimalist positioning and not buy anything that they couldn't pay for right off the top. If they couldn't pay for it, they didn't get it. And this young couple, they had two or three children, and the children were involved in this. And what happened is they were able, within less than 3 years, to conquer their debt. And they said what was fascinating to them is they really didn't feel like they were deprived. They felt like they really accomplished something, and then they could get on a brand new track of saving their money. Just wanted to share that story with you because it was something that I came across this morning, and I feel it's important. Sometimes we really need to look at our realities and look at what we can do with the money that we have so that we can get to that point of having financial freedom as we want. And I know that subject is going to be discussed on other shows. So So if you have money resolutions, don't be afraid to face up to them, honor them, and work with them. And you're going to feel really good about whatever you accomplish. Donna Sebo here. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Taking charge of your life means that you take charge of your mind, means that you realize that your action follows what you are thinking, and you want to make that action so that it is going to honor and respect you and bring the best of what you have to this wonderful experience called life that you're living in. God bless. Have an absolutely wonderful day or evening wherever you are on this fabulous planet of ours. We'll talk again soon. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.